When the Canucks miss the playoffs again.
When Jim Benning trades away all our picks.
When Goldobin is scratched for the third game in a row.
C4 is there.
With Sedin-like vision, Horvat's work ethic, and Petey's electric personality.
Here comes the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast.
With Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Powered by Overtime Media.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, currently on the Overtime Media Network. My name is Chris at Lightforce, joined virtually by Anna Forsyth at A4Sy03. And look who joined us. It's Matley at Matley underscore 61. Missing in action, possibly sequestered on Bowen Island because they're cutting back the ferry service, is Adam O'Donnell Carter at Adam FOC. We're not sure where he happens to be.
That robot was very scary.
Yeah, so this is the first time you've joined us since we've used this sort of new virtual recording apparatus, and you were scared by the
digital
robot.
Era. That robot, that thing is the Terminator, and it is going to kill me.
So you're not scared by like the pandemic or like potential global implications?
There are many things
to
be scared about these days, and that is right up there.
Bot is one of them. Okay.
Yeah.
He's a friendly bear.
Well, not even sure he's a bear. He could be a beaver.
Yeah, we're having this debate before we hit record, and you know it's completely lost on you, our podcast listeners, unless you happen to be part of Discord. Again, K16 chat's where it's at, and to get there, it's bit.ly/C4 Discord, all caps. But the little emoji, okay, I thought it's like it's either a beaver, it's a bear,
could be a dog.
I guess
it's not a dog. It's definitely not a dog.
That could be a dog for sure.
No, you failed out of zoology classes at school, right?
Sorry, you got zoology in the UK?
No, but you know, you've definitely learned what the animals are.
I don't believe I ever took a science class.
Chris, back me up. That could be a dog too.
It's not a dog.
Now that you say it, it could be. I mean, it kind of, I think, I am leaning towards bear because it sort of has like the A&W bear, you know, to it.
I
want a teen burger right now. Is that just me?
Yes, same.
I'm a matcha guy.
I live opposite an A&W, so that's dangerous.
I know we there's not a lot of hockey to talk about these days.
But we have gone so off track straight away.
Yeah, I know. Someone's got to get you guys back on track so we can actually talk about hockey, by the way, for the next hour or so. But I will maintain A&W is the best burgers in terms of fast food restaurants.
Agreed. Seconded.
I back when I ate burgers, I thought
White
Burger King.
Count.
Well, no, I was going to say Burger King.
Oh, Burger King is not better.
It's, you know, no, it's fine. Like, it's better than McDonald's, but...
Well, McDonald's fries, correct?
Sure.
Yes, but it's closer than you think.
Yeah,
I think we've had this discussion on a previous episode.
Yeah, we did. I think we did an off the rails where we rated.
Okay, that's why I remember
fast food restaurants by like burgers, fries, desserts, whatever.
Yeah. The funny thing is though is like Matt created this rundown that has us talking all about hockey, and we're gonna actually have friend of the show Cam Robinson join Matt a little bit later. But in the rundown, it's like candy bar pick three, see photo. It's like the second point in a hockey-related rundown. And sure enough, there are 9 candy bars, one of which isn't even a bar, that I guess you want us to
try. Yeah, that's a controversy
I didn't make this up. Okay, I just saw it on Twitter, and I was like, oh, this is interesting. Let's talk about it on tonight's show.
Well, first and foremost, the 9 candy bars, I'm using air quotes here. We have an Aero bar, caramel, coffee crisp, crispy crunch, Kit Kat, Mars bar, Mr. Big, O. Henry, and then a box of Smarties. Now, the
guys,
problem,
can I shock you?
Well, Smarties. What are you going to shock us with?
That's what she's going to say.
I've never had Mr. Big before.
Okay.
At least the candy bar.
I've also never had Mr. Big before.
That's so.
Okay, never mind. It took me a half second to understand what she just said.
Oh, I like the 15 ranking pause, and then at least the candy bar for added effect. I see what I was going to get at, because again, this is a G-rated podcast. Is
isolation's going well, huh, Anna?
The candy bars are Canadian, like Smarties, like what we know as Smarties
here
in Canada.
Though.
Well, okay, Smarties as we know them here in Canada. I mean, I'm not as well versed in the international candy bar market. That's not what the United States thinks Smarties are.
Okay, sure. I think what you mean is they're only available in Canada compared to the US. But most of them, I would say most of them are British.
Is a Coffee Crisp British though?
No, Coffee Crisp and Crispy Crunch and Mr. Big and O. Henry. But okay, so I would just say Smarties and Aero are British, aren't they? And Mars.
Aero is British, is it?
Yeah, Aero, I would say, is like caramel Cadbury right there. Like anything Cadbury is definitely originally. British. Yeah.
So, well, but anyway. Candy bars, Chris, Coffee Crisp is the best out of them all.
Yes, I agree. So my 1-2 are Coffee Crisp, Kit Kat.
I'm going to go Coffee Crisp, Caramilk, and Kit Kat.
Yeah, see, I'd do Caramilk number 3.
Oh, no, I like Caramilk better.
Mine would be Aero, Caramilk, Kit Kat, and Coffee Crisp would be number 4. Not that we're allowing 4, so Coffee Crisp just mixes out for me.
Yeah. Honorable mention for me goes out to Mars bars, though.
Mars is a good. That Mars bar and Full Fat Coke on a hangover are magic.
Sorry, Full Fat Coke?
As in normal Coke. I think that's an English thing to call it Full Fat Coke, but
I mean
to distinguish from diet.
Huh. Because, you know, saying Diet Coke doesn't work. This is again great hockey content that you tune in each and every week. But hey, what else are we gonna talk about at this stage? Outside of the fact that Matt has generated a rundown, as I said, that has hockey talk. So what are we covering?
On the rails.
Yeah, we're gonna get into real. We're gonna talk a little bit about the possibility that the NHL might resume in the summer, and there are a number of different avenues for them to go forth and do that. And if they do resume the season, will it include an actual season, or will it be straight to playoffs? We'll then take a spin into the F word, talking about some surprises, as well as a topic that Matt is always, you know. I was going to say loath to bring up, but now you bring it up each and every episode. It's the keep one, let one, segment that you always continue to resurrect.
Real conversation that has to be had.
Yeah, totally. And then you're going to sit down with a friend of the show, Cam Robinson, and I would imagine talk hockey and not candy bars.
Well, there will be definitely substantial hockey talk happening with Cam. We're going to talk about the Vancouver Canucks season reflections, I think, from Cam, for lack of a better word. He had a couple tweets over the weekend talking about his 10 Canucks thoughts. We'll talk about the 2020 draft class. I'm not sure if you guys heard about this new kid that just got exceptional status in the WHL, Connor Bedard. He's from North Vancouver. We'll talk to Cam about his thoughts on Connor Bedard. And then we'll also talk about Jack Rathbone. Of course, his NCAA season is over. And now he can sign an entry-level contract with the Canucks. So we'll talk to Cam about his updated thoughts on Jack Rathbone a few years removed from his draft.
So that's a jam-packed episode. Why don't we waste no more time and go straight into Rewind? So COVID-19, coronavirus disease, has us locked down. Sports is non-existent. That's not new to anyone listening. Although President of the United States apparently had a conference call with a number of leaders in North American sports leagues where he suggested that sports will be back soon. Without getting too far into the political rabbit hole that is the President of the United States of America, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I don't see sports coming back anytime soon. And if they do come back, we're probably looking at the summer, which, as a segue, puts us into some uncharted territory when it comes to NHL hockey. You know, are you looking forward to NHL hockey games in Dallas and in Arizona and in Florida in August?
100-degree heat. I mean, I've never been to any of those places, by the way, but like, I don't know. I don't know if you guys have talked about this in the last couple episodes that I've been away from.
Because you don't listen.
I know. I download. I only listen, right? But I don't know. Am I the only one who's kind of thinking like August hockey might actually be kind of fun?
Sure. Fun. Yeah, but like, just because something feels good doesn't mean it's right.
And I was watching old Canucks highlights just the other day, and I think at this point I would welcome competitive dog races, so what do I know? But I don't know. I think playoff hockey in August and September would kind of be interesting to watch, especially if it's the Canucks that are involved.
Sure, I want to watch the Vancouver Canucks, you know, play hockey throughout the year. But all things considered, you know, August hockey, one, seems surreal. Two, does present a new problem, which is what happens to the 2020-2021 season. Like, you know, that would, I would presume, be delayed and potentially have a compressed schedule itself if we're talking about playoff hockey, you know, going throughout the summer. Think about these teams that potentially have played a compressed amount of hockey, even if you think about, you know, a playoff tournament or a reduced schedule of best of five or whatever it might look like. And then suddenly it's congratulations, training camp starts next week. I mean, I can't imagine that happening, but even if it doesn't, you know, there's players' health and well-being to consider because, you know, for what we've seen forever is they leave it all on the line to win that Stanley Cup.
So how about to sort of tee off the conversation, we have a bit of a round table to sort of discuss what you feel should be on the table. And let's preface it by saying that canceling the season altogether is also on the table. Just for the sake of starting the conversation, I'll start by saying, again, I think August hockey might kind of be fun. And if we were to go to a straight to playoffs format starting in, let's say, early August, hypothetically, I think you could do something like a best of three first round, best of five second round, and then best of seven for the conference finals and the Stanley Cup, potentially ending all of that playoff hockey by, let's say, mid-September. I think at that point, you're probably looking at a month-long offseason before the NHL regular season for 2020-2021 starts maybe in mid-November, and you can go to a perhaps 72-game NHL schedule. That's I think, what I think is the best-case scenario for the NHL at this point, assuming it's a early August return to hockey.
Right, and I think the NHL wants to award a cup this season. So if they can get whatever form that off that postseason takes, they'll take it. In my opinion, and I'm sure it's selfish, but I just want to put this mess behind us and start 2021 on time.
Your opinion is that you should just cancel the rest of the season.
Yep. Like, I love the playoffs as, like, but I love, like, the months that it takes to get there. I don't want, like, a three-game series. It cheapens it.
I don't think it cheapens it. I mean, I've heard that discussion before about cheapening the season. I mean, we've had, what was it, in 2013, a 44-game NHL season when there was the labor disruption, and we still awarded a Stanley Cup that I believe went to the Kings that year. And no one is here putting an asterisk next to the Kings.
So
aren't they?
Well, I mean, when you look it up on something like Wikipedia, I'm sure there is some indication. But the problem that I foresee, and I don't disagree. I think the NHL they want to award Stanley Cup. That is without question. They want to resume a hockey season. But the problem that I foresee is that one. From a pure competitive perspective, it'll be significantly different. I guess the question we haven't addressed, are they going to restart a regular season of some sort? Or are we presuming
that's a
wash? I
don't think they have the luxury of time is my
right.
guesstimation.
So then when it comes to starting the playoffs, there are teams that are currently outside of the 16 who will argue that they should deserve some form of shot to play into it. So then maybe there is this play-in tournament. Like, we would be seeing not a compressed schedule where a Stanley Cup is awarded. We would have seen a weird schedule that completed about, what, two-thirds, three-quarters, had to stop, then had to have some special once-in-a-lifetime play-in tournament or, you know, whatever that might look like, into a compressed playoff, into a Stanley Cup final that takes place in, you know, August, running into a very tight timeline before season starts. I'm kind of with Anna here, where I feel that we've started to reach this point where the NHL may need to seriously consider pulling the plug. And, you know, we also have to keep in mind, the players are no longer under contract as of July 1st. So some serious negotiating needs to take place between the, you know, Players Association as well as the league. The league is hemorrhaging money right now. And maybe I'm making that far too.
They're certainly not making money.
Let's and you know, there's already been conversation that escrow is going to be significant next year. Like there are so many factors right now that are driving the business of hockey that it may make better sense to say, you know what, let's plan for next season. Let's focus on making next season even better, really reinvigorating the fan base. And you could almost argue that people will then have sort of maybe not more excitement, but they might be jonesing for that return of hockey a little bit more than, you know, us who are our diehard fans who would love to see it, you know, start up tomorrow if logistically it could happen. And Matt, you've been corrected by a friend of the show, Nexus, here in patron chat. It was the Blackhawks that won the shortened season, not the Kings.
And I would just say, like, I'm actually not that invested, like, in, like, the correct way to do things, as I might have seemed earlier. Like, I just think it's getting past point. Like, if we took a month off, that's one thing. But I think even starting late July, the play-in tournament is pretty optimistic, especially, like, I mean, it depends where it is, right, if we go neutral or not, but...
Well, it won't be in Toronto. I mean, Toronto has already said they will not allow events to take place until July 1. And so if the NHL were to resume hockey, your largest Canadian market just said not allowed until July. Right. Like, I think there's just...
But I think July is even, like...
Oh, yeah, agreed. And I think that's the problem, is there are just too many factors beyond the control of the NHL right now to realistically think that there is a defined path forward. I won't say the door is absolutely shut yet, but, you know, let's consider the NHL also has to look at the fact that they might resume a hockey season and then have... difficulty getting on television outside of Canada, and even in Canada they might have some struggles. You're going to have all these sports suddenly show up: baseball, NBA basketball, you know, on Canada they got the CFL, you've got you know, NFL football combine and whatnot potentially ramping up, you've got the return of golf, which, you know, golf has been pushing out majors you know, into the fall right now, and they're hoping beyond hope that they can make it happen. I just wonder if, again, the NHL just doesn't go and say, hey, let's be smart about this. But, you know, when has the NHL been smart?
Yeah, I think that's maybe expecting a little too much.
I totally agree with what you guys are saying. Like, I think from a all things considered standpoint, the NHL should be looking at canceling the season altogether. But, I mean, Chris, you touched on it yourself. The NHL is losing a lot of money these days. And if they have any opportunity that's within the, like, public safety scope of being able to recoup some of that lost revenue, I think that they would be amiss to not at least consider that, or at least put that on the table.
And that's a fair point. I think there are owners out there that would love to see a gate of some sort. It doesn't have to be a sizable gate, but, you know, we're going to take a loss. Let's look at ways to mitigate that loss. And, you know, if, let's say, the Vancouver Canucks are in this playoff tournament or whatever we want to call it, and let's say Vancouver with Rogers Arena could be considered a neutral site venue, because what else is in there outside of concerts, which for the most part, I think most concert tours have pretty much, you know, pulled the plug. You know, I think the family, they'd be looking at this like, you know, let's make a few bucks here. So I see value on the business side, maybe to both arguments. But in the grand scheme of things, at some point in time, you know, you have to say it's done and move forward. And I'm not trying to sound like the pessimist. I would like hockey to return. But in the current state of the world, and
there are bigger things important than hockey. And I think we all share in that for sure. I mean, I think part of me just wants to see some sort of resolution to the end of the NHL season, just because it was taken away from us so quickly and abruptly that I don't think any of us had the chance to sort of, you know, say goodbye to the NHL season, so to speak, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I definitely feel
I couldn't even tell you what our last game was, to be honest with you. Like, who did we play in our last game?
The Islanders.
Was it the Islanders?
The Islanders, that overtime.
Oh, yeah, that was. Good win. Time. It was a happier time.
Yeah, I totally get you. I just think, like, there's so much to, like, you have to mitigate not just the players' like safety, but the public safety, because I can't see like the NHL going forward if it's a behind closed doors deal. Like, I know that back in the UK, football and cricket are both considering that, like, return to play behind closed doors later in the summer. But like, that's because they make most of their money through broadcasting deals. Like, the NHL still makes a lot of their money through ticket sales. So,
mm-hmm. Does anyone else, and maybe I'm in the minority here on this one, but doesn't the idea of players playing in an empty stadium so you can almost hear a mic'd up version of the entire game, doesn't that appeal to some of you?
Okay, I'm going to maybe twist this on you a little bit. You caught any of the recent WWE coverage?
Oh, I mean, I've seen clips and the highlights of it. It's interesting, but you can't put the WWE and the NHL in the exact same conversation.
Yeah, WWE is true entertainment, and the loss of the pop that you get from the crowd is significant. You know, a sporting event, hockey, I was watching Aussie Rules football because it was like the last live sporting event that existed up until a few weeks ago, and they were playing in closed door stadiums, and there still, you know, was that sort of, I don't know, it's just the sound of the play that, you know, added to atmosphere. I could maybe get behind a closed building, you know, hockey game, especially with the broadcasts as they are, but I still would miss the atmosphere.
I don't know. I think it would be kind of cool just to have a mic'd up version of Antoine Roussel in an empty arena.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny. Sorry, Matt. It's kind of funny. Like, having been in pretty small football stadiums, like, where you can hear the players, like, it's definitely interesting and you can have a lot of fun with it, but I think after, like, one or two games, you'd miss the crowd.
By the way, Chris, on a real, like, off-the-rails thing, did you know that yesterday and this weekend's WrestleMania, there were some matches that were filmed weeks ago?
Oh, I did not know that. I know that they had split WrestleMania up over the course of two nights. Right. I was not aware that they had actually filmed some of the matches.
So there was one match. Well, there was the Undertaker graveyard match with AJ Styles, and that was like one of those filmed Hollywood style type of matches. And then there was a Last Man Standing match between Edge and Randy Orton, which was filmed apparently 2 weeks ago.
And that
cheapens WrestleMania in my mind.
Well, I mean, think there was always that mystique that, is it truly scripted? I mean, everyone understood that it was, and I'm not trying to knock the athleticism that's involved by the talent in the ring, but now it's totally, it comes across like they're trying to fake the emotion that they have. Like, it's just, I get it. They are able to do it. But it's worse than seeing some of the late night hosts filming from their couch.
Yeah. So, I mean, to your guys' point about it kind of being maybe shell of hockey, if you have NHL hockey at an empty stadium, I get that. But I think at this point, in some ways, like, the world kind of needs sports back in their lives just to restore some sense of normalcy in everybody's lives. And I mean, sure, the safety of the players needs to be paramount and everything has to be done like according to the book to ensure hockey comes back. But I think we're kind of in a stage where in the not too distant future, we're going to kind of need a little bit of hockey in our lives.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, I would love for it to just come back and be there, but yeah, there's just so many other things to keep.
As much as I love talking about chocolate bars with you guys, I have a hard time believing that we could do 60 minutes of an episode like that.
Hey, Anne and I make magic happen every week that we're together, so I'm not sure why you can't do it too. You know what? I think this is a good time for us to take a quick break as, you know, Matt fumes a little bit at me and dive into the F word.
He liked to say the F word.
Well, then get the f*** here then. Okay, see ya.
He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you a f***ing explanation about it. I can't.
You f*** out of here.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
You know, the F word was a great idea when Adam consistently showed up to record episodes because, you know, he just has this sort of F word, you know, mentality about him.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It's not the same where it's the three of us trying to simulate the F word. And what we thought we'd lead off with is, again, the Matt special, biggest citizen surprise, JT Miller or Quinn Hughes?
I think it's a good topic of discussion.
Oh, yeah. Especially we just don't have the same emotional range.
Yeah, but yeah. It's like none of us, I think, are going to be too, you know, flipping tables upset. Like the F word as a segment was supposed to be, you know, that calm, cool, collected, oh, Adam's ticked off moment.
Well, to be fair, there's hardly anything to be ticked off about these days.
Well, I'm ticked off that
there's no hockey. Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, Canucks Nation can easily get an argument going.
That's an entire podcast onto itself. Canucks Nation, Canucks Social. I mean, there's, you know, that March Madness bracket that Daryl Keepin was doing, and people were
I crashed out in the first round of.
You went up against Clay, and I'm sorry. This is not a slight against you, but that, club that Clay's got going, like, and the following, the fact that Clay got knocked out shocked me.
So he gave me $20 to vote for him.
Well, when you're rolling in the YouTube creator dough that Clay is, you can buy influence.
Wait, I don't think I mentioned this to you guys. A couple weeks ago when we were so hockey deprived, I was actually watching one of Clay's live chats on YouTube.
He's been doing it quite frequently, actually.
No, he's doing a great job with it, actually. It's keeping me engaged in a time where we're obviously lacking on content to talk about.
He, hasn't invited any of the three of us on, as far as I'm aware.
Oh, we're all fuzzy shapes to him now.
Back on topic, though. JT Miller or Quinn Hughes, bigger season surprise. If you happen to follow our Discord, you know that one of my hot takes is that Quinn Hughes would find his way down to Utica this season. So I'm going to say
that's the biggest surprise. That take, that's going in the freezing cold takes section of the C4 podcast.
Well, and I felt he would be the odd man out. And I'd sort of position that if he doesn't go to Utica, he'd be seven. But kid's got skill. My kid is good. Like and maybe it's the Canucks fan in me who finally had the, optimism beaten out of him about the number of players that have been, pumped up over the years. I feel Quinn Hughes is the bigger surprise. I actually, looking at JT Miller and seeing his addition to the team, while the price that the Canucks paid was not one that I was entirely keen on, I accept that he was going to contribute. Whereas Quinn Hughes, I had doubts, and he's obviously shown me the reality that I refuse to embrace.
Right, I agree wholeheartedly. Like I totally thought there would be a bit of a learning curve for Quinn Hughes at some point this season, but in some ways, he actually seemed to get better as the NHL season wore on and really, really started to shine. Like I think he, by the end of whatever this period was, by the time the NHL suspended itself, I would say Quinn Hughes was probably one of the top 20 defensemen in the entire NHL, not just rookies. I feel Quinn Hughes has fully arrived as a superstar through three quarters of an NHL season.
I'm still going to say JT Miller, though.
How?
I don't know, because it's I saw Quinn Hughes' first game. I know, but I saw Quinn Hughes' first game and I was just like, oh shoot, he is the real deal. And I'm not saying like I never thought he would falter even a tiny bit. He has surprised me. But JT Mello was like this really good player who'd sort of not fallen back, but like he wasn't at his best last year. Like he's been elite.
But you know, I think from a perspective of expectations, I don't think anyone really expected JT Miller to Louis Eriksson it up.
No, I know, but I didn't expect him to be the best.
He had like 70 points, 72 points at the end of the suspension of the, or at the start of the NHL suspension.
Could be, right, I'd like look it up.
On but track for his best year.
Well, he had already had his best year by this point. Yeah.
3/4 of the way through.
I mean, Miller was definitely a point per game player. He had career highs, I believe, in goals and in assists by that point. 72 points through 69 games. So he was on an 80-plus point pace.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I mean,
that's
for me,
actually
like,
beating his career best, like, by a long
way.
I don't think
any of us, even in our wildest optimism dreams, thought that Miller could be an 80-plus point player for the Canucks this season.
So are you convincing yourself to change your vote here, there, Matt?
No, yes. I still think what Quinn Hughes did was like name me the number of defensemen who score 50 points in their rookie year. That list is very few and far between. And what both Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar did in the Avalanche, it is almost unheard of to see two defensemen in one rookie class putting up 50 plus points in their rookie seasons. And this wasn't even a full NHL season.
Hmm.
So while I fully expected Miller to be maybe like a 60 or 70 point guy, I certainly didn't expect Quinn Hughes to be a 50 plus point defenseman in his rookie season.
Sure. I'm not saying taking anything away from Quinn Hughes. I just had higher expectations of him, and he's like, he has surpassed them for sure, but JT Miller's blown me away.
Well, and here's another doozy. The other, topic that Matt likes to resurrect from time to time is keep one or let one go. The two players that he has listed here are Tyler Toffoli and Jacob Markstrom, which, as everyone knows, are both theoretically not going to be in Vancouver come July 1st, although that's not to suggest they don't re-sign or potentially sign a contract prior to, who knows, whatever the heck happens over the next while. But in a world where you could only keep one, which of the two players do you keep? Anna, why don't you go first this time? Tyler Toffoli or Jacob Markstrom? You can only keep one.
Jacob Markstrom. I'd love to keep Tyler Toffoli, but he just might be too expensive. Just like we've shown that, you know, Thatcher Demko is not quite ready.
Okay, Matt?
Keeping Tyler Toffoli.
Yeah?
So here's why I think I would rather keep Tyler Toffoli over Markstrom. Tyler Toffoli, in the very few games that he did manage to play as a Vancouver Canuck, he looked quite at home very quickly. And Toffoli is the kind of player that we've just been dying to add to our top six for so long. And I also don't think you can underestimate the friendship that he has with Tanner Pearson, how this is the first time he's been able to play in a Canadian market, how, you know, he's identified clearly that the Canucks are an up-and-coming team. He's got Stanley Cup pedigree to his name. I think those are ingredients that you can't underrate, despite what everything Jacob Markstrom accomplished this season. And Jacob Markstrom, arguably, perhaps unquestionably, the team's MVP this year. But I feel like no player could be more impactful to the Canucks top six than having Tyler Toffoli. And chances are, I feel like the Canucks would have taken a run at Toffoli if they hadn't acquired him at free age at the trade deadline earlier anyway. I think Toffoli was a guy that Jim Benning had identified a long time ago. And I think this is someone that he would have spent the bank for earlier. And perhaps by luring him now, there's a chance that the Canucks have a better shot at keeping him at free agency.
See, the situation that I face is if you had asked me, you know, let's say at the start of the season, I had some inkling of Vancouver and Tyler Toffoli, and I would have told you, I would have kept Toffoli. Markstrom could go. The Vancouver Canucks have solid goaltending depth. And as far as the team is concerned, I didn't feel the window was now. The window is in a few seasons. We then see Markstrom go down to injury and then Demko come in and really get a good run at being the guy. And he did show signs of maybe not lack of development, but maybe needing more seasoning in the NHL. Because I saw that, I'm now leaning towards the belief that Markstrom, if the Vancouver Canucks window is sort of now, is the goaltender they need to make that reality. Now, to Anna's point, I would love to have both, but I don't think the Vancouver Canucks in the current state can afford both. I mean, Toffoli's going to get, King's ransom on the open market, and the Vancouver Canucks don't have a means to go and pay for a Markstrom, a Toffoli, and in every other contract that they're possibly going to have to go and sign over the next 2 years. So I'm going to say Markstrom.
Let me ask you this, though. I mean, from what we saw from Jacob Markstrom, I'm curious as to if he can sustain this level of play beyond just this season. Like, how many more years of a window of competitiveness does Jacob Markstrom have in him, in your mind?
I give him two.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, and I know that might not be enough for the Canucks, but like, Matt, as good as Tyler Toffoli was in his 10 games with Vancouver, Canucks won less than half of those because they didn't have Jacob Markstrom saving their butts.
Yeah, and the team has shown that Markstrom is what they need to pull themselves out of the fire because they don't have the capability to score, you know, 7 or 8 goals a game in the style of hockey that I love to see. So I have to, you know, give Jacob Markstrom his due. He was, you know, doing what Roberto Luongo kind of did in his first season in Vancouver, you know, got the Canucks wins that they had absolutely no business getting. Now I say 2 years, and in 2 years' time, that's where either a Demko or a DiPietro would, you know, slide into the starting role, and then, you know, considerably the Vancouver Canucks should be a better team. You'll have an older Besser, an older Pettersson, an older Hughes, an older Gaudette, and again, other players that we'll see come out through the system. So,
I mean, you wrote the book on what you call asset management. I mean, check it out on Amazon. You can find the book, Somehow I Manage, by Chris Golden.
Yeah, self-published. Yes,
self-published. Foreword written by Clay. But at the same time, you have to acknowledge that there's still the expansion problem to worry about. I mean, by keeping Toffoli over Markstrom, you're able to solve your goalie problem at expansion as well.
Sure, but if we're thinking about expansion, we're not thinking about the right priority. The priority should be a competitive team that can win the Canucks Stanley Cup. I do believe expansion needs to be a consideration, but that should not be the primary consideration. If it's, as I say, you know, primary driver, you're thinking about the wrong things.
Okay.
And I think you make a valid point, Matt, but Canucks are already in a mess. They've signed expensive D-men who aren't that good. Don't need to be subtle about that one, who that refers to. They've got some expensive Jags on the bottom of their lineup. Like, they're in a mess, and it's just the best way out of it, considering that, one, Thatcher Demko isn't ready, two, their blue line is pretty poor. Markstrom just provides them the best opportunity to win, given those circumstances.
Maybe using this as a segue to the next topic that we wanted to touch on is if the NHL granted every team one compliance buyout to get under a potentially lowered salary cap, who would you buy
Erickson.
Out?
Louis well, Erickson.
Ask, like, yeah. Louis Erickson. Is there a player not named Louis Erickson, that you would consider?
If we got two buyouts.
Well, yeah, but that. Okay, so this is the other thing, too. The consideration of the NHL granting buyouts also has to play into negotiations with the Players Association. The NHL can't just say, here you go, because the PA is going to say, well, cool, you can pay our players, you know, full money. And they'll go sign another contract for more money elsewhere. Likely not going to happen. I don't know how likely the PA would agree to more than one buyout. I think they would accept one buyout as a necessity. I think
one would be on the table too.
You think so?
I think one is on the table if the NHL is indeed hemorrhaging a lot of money and they have to lower the salary cap.
Yeah, one is, because I think the Players Association would look at a world of hurt, especially with escrow coming into the picture, and players really don't like escrow. But as you start to increase the number of compliance buyouts, the terms of those buyouts are then going to be the sticking point. I can't see the NHL wanting to pay, you know, full value on a buyout. I can't see the PA saying, yeah, no problem. So like, it would have to be dire straits in regards to a reduction of revenue for the PA to even accept that that's a possibility. And let's not forget, there has been historical doubt between revenue from the NHL side as well as revenue on the PA side. They have disagreed as to what those numbers happen to be. So, you know, we're in a, I know, uncharted territory, but at the end of the day, there's already this sort of lack of trust in that world.
Oh, yeah, big time.
But yeah, Louis Erickson.
But it's Louis Erickson. Sorry, it's just an easy answer. He's the most expensive contract. He's like for the least production.
I feel like Tyler Myers is also at least on the table or in the discussion.
Really? I'd say he's right behind, but like, how can you sign that deal and then a year later being like, oh, whoops. No,
but like, and we'll get into this with Cam Robinson, but one of his thoughts on the Canucks season was that Tyler Myers is exactly what he thought he would be. And he's a middling top four defenseman that is tall, and that's about it.
I know. Like, I think he's everything we thought he would be. But what did Jim expect? I don't know.
I think Jim Benning perhaps thought he was going to be a lot more versatile. And I think Myers is a guy who needs to play sheltered minutes to not look atrocious on the ice.
I don't see him being bought out.
I don't see him being bought out either, but I think from an idealistic standpoint, he should be at least in the conversation.
Yeah, like I don't knock the points you raised. I just can't for the life of me see, you know, Trader Jim actually exercising a buyout on a Myers. That would be Mike Gillis thinking. And if there's one thing that Jim Benning is not, is Mike Gillis. So.
Yeah, anywho. I think you're right, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, let's
Jay Beagle should also be on the table, by the way.
Oh, just sneaking it in under the buzzer there, Jay Beagle. Just
there's a lot of terms still tied up in Jay Beagle, and I think Jay Beagle is great on the penalty kill, and then at 5-on-5 he struggles.
But he's won a cup. Well, he's good in the room.
You know who's also won a cup? Tyler Toffoli.
Do you know who's also great in the room? JT Miller. Like, we don't. Beagle seems lovely, but we don't need him. Replace him with a real Beagle ASAP.
BTW, well, like, remember how when the Canucks signed Beagle, they talked about how he would be like that veteran leadership presence in the room, and it seems like ever since JT Miller arrived on the Canucks, it has been nonstop talk about how Miller's changed the culture of this team, Miller's done this, and there hasn't been a whole lot of talk lately about what Jay Beagle brings to the room.
That's because he hasn't been in the room. He's unfortunately been hurt so much.
Well, and that's part of the reason why I think that Jay Beagle would need to be in the conversation to be bought out if the Canucks got a second compliance buyout. You know, going back to Miller, like, people talk about how no one's changed the culture more than JT Miller. And I just think that he brings everything that Jay Beagle does, plus he's a legit top six player.
Well, that's a topic for next episode, because we have hit the time. We're going to take a short break, dive into Half Full, Half Empty with a friend of the show, Cam Robinson.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He didn't play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
Back here on the C4 podcast and joined by friend of the show, Cam Robinson, of course, wears many hats in hockey circles, both at Elite Prospects and Dauber Prospects. You can also hear him on occasion on Sportsnet 650. Cam, thanks for joining up today.
Yeah, no problem, Matt. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and obviously these are uncertain times for all of us, so let me begin first by saying hope you and your family are staying safe during these times.
Yeah, we're doing well. We're plucking around the property a lot, getting, you know, the to-do list done quickly, which is nice, and we've got the two young kids running around, so they definitely keep us busy. I know some people are isolated by themselves, and I feel for them for sure, but for some reason it's life is busier now while this is going on at our house.
I think that tends to be the case whenever you have young kids in the household. Somehow you end up being even busier. And I know you're a teacher by day as well. So that must be foreign territory, I guess, for you as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually up at the school right now for the first time since all this happened. I'm collecting some resources in my grade book to try to help some of my students as I'm remotely teaching them. It's definitely unique, but we're pushing through, and we're trying to have a good time while we do it.
Yeah, fair enough. We will jump into hockey in just a second here, Cam, but I don't know if you've seen this. There have been a lot of those like pick three type of graphics floating around on social media these days. And I don't know, I thought that might be a good Kickstarter here to talk about this one. Did you see the one where you pick three chocolate bars? And I'll run off the list here. I want to know what your pick three would be for these chocolate bars. Aero, Caramilk, Coffee Crisp, Crispy Crunch, Kit Kat, Mars, Mr. Big, O. Henry, and Smarties. If you could pick three, what do you got?
I'm going Coffee Crisp. I'm going Classic. Kit Kat.
Yep.
And I might even go. Oh,
he's
gosh.
He's going off the board here. He's going off the board.
Yeah. The what was the one now that I forget the what I was thinking of? The first one I peeled off.
We got Aero.
What was number two on the board?
You've got Aero, Caramel, Crispy Crunch, Mars, Mr. Big, O. Henry, and Smarties left for you here.
Yeah, we'll go Crispy Crunch.
Oh, two out of three is not bad. I'm going Caramilk here on the third one is what we've been saying. But anyway, I digress.
As long as you agree, it's not Smarties.
Coffee Crisp is like number one with a bullet for me, though.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I think so too. Over the weekend, Cam, I loved reading your 10 things we learned about the Canucks this season. You posted them on Twitter. I think we're all just maybe generally thirsty for Canucks content these days. I found a few of them interesting. First, it's a reminder that we can follow you and that you're one of the best hockey followers, I think, on Twitter, at @hockey_Robinson. Won't go through them all, but a few of them that stood out to me. Number one off your list was Quinn Hughes is an instant star. Would love to hear your reasoning behind that. I know you've been tracking Quinn Hughes ever since maybe he was a 15, 16-year-old, and you were ecstatic when the Canucks picked him in 2018. And so from what you've seen from Quinn Hughes top to bottom this year, you got 68 games to sort of look at his body of work. What's made you sort of come to that conclusion that he is that instant star?
Well, I definitely thought it was quite likely that he was going to be an instant star too. That I said last summer before the year started that he had a legitimate chance to impact the Canucks in a greater way than Elias Pettersson did in his rookie season. And I think he did that. I think his rookie season was a hair better than Pettersson's last year. And that's because obviously it's a little apples and oranges when we're comparing a center to a defender. But I think to step into the NHL at his size, at that position, and do the things that he did. He held his head above water defensively. Obviously, there were some miscues, and you can point at plus minus, which is obviously a very flawed statistic that it wasn't great for him. But at even strength defensively, I thought that his underlying metrics were sound, but it was the transitional play, the offensive upside that he was showcasing immediately. That skating is just, it's to be marveled at. And that's always been the crux of his game. And you know, so it just became throughout the season that was more for the world that, you know, Quinn Hughes became an instant star. He became must-see TV on a Canucks team that's starting to compile a few of those kids, which is what you want to see for the future. So for my money, yeah, I think he's well-recognized around the league. I don't know if he's going to be able to pull off the Calder Trophy because a lot of the media members really love Kel McCarr, but I think that for my money, even outside of the Canucks bias, I would be giving it to Hughes.
So if you had a vote, you would put it on Hughes over McCarr?
I would, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Number four, you had Jacob Markstrom as a top-tier starter. I don't think any of us really saw him taking this much of a leap forward this season, clearly elevating his status into at least one of those top-tier goaltenders in the league, as you put it. Did you see this coming at all for Jacob Markstrom, the ability to steal as many games as he did this season?
You know, I had my suspects because down the back, whatever it was, 40 games in 2018-19, he was an elite level starter. He was clicking at nearly a 920 save percentage. His quality start rate was amongst the best in the league, you know, above 60%, near 65%. And then he just built off that this season. And so the numbers, they've jumped up whatever 5 or 6 points on the save percentage model there for him, and his quality starts hovering around the same thing. But it's just the way that you could see the confidence in him. So he maybe could have saved a few more pucks and had a 925 save percentage, but the big saves when the Canucks needed him, he was there and he was shutting the door so that they could get that 2-1 win. He was making a big save to keep them in a 2-1 game, things like that, where he's really come into his own. And I love to see it, especially for a guy that, you know, he was championed as the greatest goaltending prospect outside of the NHL for years in that Florida system. And then when he came over to Vancouver, and it just seemed like pucks would squeak through him. He was such a big guy that he wasn't tight enough and he didn't have those mechanics dialed in enough, but the potential was always there. And then, you know, you find yourself in the American League when you're in your mid-20s and you were supposed to already be a starter in the NHL. And that could be disheartening for some people. And, you know, that might derail a career. And for him, you know, he went to Utica. He became the man there. He really cleaned up his game in the American League. And then he's done the same thing in the NHL. And so that's what you'd like to see from a guy. And so he's 30 years old now, and this is going to be his last big contract. And I hope he gets paid, and I think he will, and he's earned every penny of it. And I don't see that will and that desire and that confidence sliding away anytime soon. So if it's with Vancouver or if it's elsewhere, I think that he's got a few solid years of being a top flight netminder in this league, and arguably someone who could be, you know, getting a Vezina nomination at the end of the season.
Right. So if you have your armchair GM hat on, I mean, are you paying Jacob Markstrom if you're Jim Benning, or are you sort of kicking tires to see what kind of contract he's looking to command?
Oh, I'm definitely trying to find out what he wants and try to work that number down, whether it's either on term or in dollars amount. Like, I'd love to give Jacob Markstrom a 3-year deal and pay him $7 million or something like that. You know, give him a little bit more in the dollar amount to save on those years, because it is dicey to give 30-plus-year-old netminders long-term deals. And, you know, we see it in Florida right now, what's going on with Bobrovsky, and I still think he's a good netminder, and I think he's going to rebound, but you take a big, big risk when you're handing out those long deals to older netminders, because oftentimes these guys break down, right? It's a difficult position to have longevity in, and the ones that do are those truly great netminders that can be great until they're 37, 38, 39, but they're few and far between. So, you know, if they can get them on a deal, you know, 4 years, $6.5 million, something like that, I think they should do it. I think they're gonna sign him unless he goes bananas and asks for monster money or says, hey, I want to see what free agency offers, and then another team goes nuts and offers him a big deal. You know, I could see Carolina sniffing around him. But at the same time, it's a huge decision for the organization, because whatever they do is going to decide the future of their crease for the next, you know, not just for him, but for Demko and for DiPietro for the next half dozen years anyways. And so if they sign him up, they basically are telling the rest of the hockey world that, you know, Demko's on the market and he's going to be cheap because we're going to lose him to Seattle in the expansion draft anyways. And if they walk away from Markstrom, then it's like, all right, it's Demko time, and they got to go get themselves a nice solid backup and wait for Mikey D to come up and kind of battle with them. Because, you know, for a couple of years now, we've heard whispers that there's a few people in the organization that value DiPietro over Demko. They like his unflappable mentality, the way that he can't be shook up after a bad goal. Not to say Demko does get shook up after bad goals, but it's just maybe it'll be telling. If they re-sign Markstrom, maybe that's a kind of a glimpse to show us that they do value DiPietro more, and they can go out and they can trade Demko and get something in return. It won't be of the same value that he'll bring long term, because I think he's going to be a nice starter in this league as well.
Yeah, I think you've really hit the nail on the head here. I truly do believe that we're approaching a very critical juncture, at least in the crease for the Vancouver Canucks as an organization. What they decide to do, whether it's Thatcher Demko or whether it's Jacob Markstrom, will decide really the direction that this organization is going for the next few years. So I think that's one of the big storylines that we're going to end up continuing to watch. I guess you sort of touched on it a little bit, but maybe from what you've seen from Thatcher Demko in that very short stint as the everyday starter for the Canucks in Markstrom's absence, just is he just not quite there yet? He's shown the potential, but is he just not fully developed where he's the guy you want if you're a team that's looking to put your chips into the middle of the table like the Canucks are?
Well, that's exactly it. And obviously what we saw this season is that they are very much all in on this group and this window, which means that they're going to shorten their window by pushing in a little bit early, is that they will have a legitimate chance. And I understand the logic behind it. While you're paying Pettersson and Hughes, you know, entry-level contracts, take a swing while you can, right? This year wouldn't have been bad, but they spent some of their draft capital to get JT Miller, and then they did the same by moving that second-round pick in Tyler Madden. And they were saying that we've got these guys on a good contract. We've got Markstrom on a good contract. Let's roll. Let's see what we can do. Let's see if we can make some noise. And obviously nobody sees a global pandemic coming and kind of pulling the rug out from under you. And so we can't blame them for that. But that message is very, very clear that this team is ready to go all in, which is why I think it's almost a sure bet that they're going to resign Markstrom unless he decides to leave. So with that in mind, I think Demko will get there. I think he's going to need some more time to do it. You know, this is a guy that doesn't have a ton of NHL experience under his belt. Does he even have 50 games yet? So it takes some time for these goaltenders, regardless of his age. He's what, 24. He's going to get there when he's 26, 27. He's going to be one of these guys that are going to be just racking up a ton of good numbers and wins and stuff like that. And it's just a matter of what organization it's going to be in, because I do believe in Thatcher Demko. He's shown it all the way up. He's done what you want to see from a netminder. Dominate at the college level, move on to the American League, figure it out, dominate the American League, move up to the NHL, figure it out. And then that next step is yet to come.
Yeah. And I just to that point, I think that there were a few Demko detractors out there who just unfairly put him in that conversation and compared him to Jacob Markstrom. And it's tough to do that when you're Demko and you have as many games as you do under your belt, and you're still at a very young age by goaltender lifespan standards. It's a difficult situation to put Demko in when you're replacing Jacob Markstrom when he went down with that injury. So I think it's an unfair position he was put in. And I think if anything, it's sort of solidified my belief in his long-term upside.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's fair because it was a difficult spot, because you're trying to replace an all-world netminder at that time. When Markstrom stepped aside, mm-hmm. he was literally playing at the top of his game, and you can't replace that. And you know what? I don't think anybody really expected him realistically to replace that. They wanted him to be good enough to get some wins. And you know, he was good enough to get a few wins. He wasn't great. The Canucks weren't great in front of him for a little bit of that stretch too, but you know, he could have been better. He definitely could have been better. You tack on 5 to 10 more save percentage points onto it, and all of a sudden that 3-4 record down the stretch is maybe 5-2 or something like that.
Yeah, fair enough. The last point I really wanted you to touch on was your comment about how Pettersson couldn't be a force at both ends. Be afraid, world, is your exact words. I think none of us sort of disputed what Pettersson could do in the offensive zone, but you're really sort of staking the claim that Pettersson can be a two-way force here.
Yeah, and the metrics, they support me in that regard too, because he was very, very good this season. I know JPAT put out a poll there, who should be the Canucks MVP this week or last week, and Mark.
Yeah, and you took a bit of flack for this one too, right?
Oh, I mean, and I'm happy.
Pettersson was the last option in this pool.
Yeah, and I'm happy to take some flack on it and illuminate people. Is that it's funny, you know, it's fair to make the argument that Markstrom was the team MVP because he was the backbone of the team. He was there every night and he was bringing his A game. And like I said, he was making those big stops. But on a shift by shift basis, Pettersson was by far the best skater on the team. From a wins above replacement, from a goals above replacement standpoint, from shot share, from just the way he was creating, he wasn't just the best player on the team. He was arguably a Hart Trophy level player this season. So Evolving Wild, they have some tremendous details to their advanced stats, and you know they've got him just behind Panarin as the best player in the league this year. And you know I could argue both sides of that coin, where I don't think that, you know, his play this season warrants a Hart Trophy finalist position, but that's only because he didn't put up 110 points. And that's what you need to in today's standards to do that. But if you're looking at a two-way player who can impact the game in all situations, he was among the very best. And so, you know, I loved Quinn Hughes. I loved what he did. And I think he had a slightly better rookie campaign than Pettersson did. But to say Hughes was a better player than Pettersson this season, no thanks.
Right. And, you know, just sort of taking the sum of the parts here. I mean, I look at the young pieces that this team is sort of building with. You mentioned it, like Pettersson, Hughes. You've got Horvat, who's doing great at two-way hockey, and Markstrom has shown his MVP-like status this year. Where do you sort of stand on optimism about this team really being a true Stanley Cup contender for the next maybe 5 years or so? Are they there? Do they have the right pieces in place to be a legit contender?
I think they have the pieces in place to go on a run and get hot at the right time and have their goaltender get hot at the right time and make some noise. And who knows what happens? I think they're at that point now. They aren't consistent enough to really lock them in as a top flight contender. And I think that comes with the immaturity of their star players. That takes some time when these guys are 23, 24, 25, as you know, Pettersson, Besser, Hughes, then it's going to be a lot different because you're going to have that consistency. They'll be veterans by that point and they'll been around the block. And so to get that experience in the playoffs as a young team trying to make some noise, that would have been really beneficial for them this year, obviously long-term. I think that they definitely have holes on this team that need to be fixed up before you can really say that they are amongst the very best and can compete for, a 4 or 5 year window. And so that includes locked in getting Horvat a true play driving top six winger to go with him, and that's not Louis Eriksson. And Tanner Pearson is a great secondary piece, but he should be a guy that's on a good team. He should be playing on your third line. He shouldn't be really an anchor on that second line. I think that they need to get a true third line center so that Pettersson and Horvat don't need to be matching up. And that's not Brandon Sutter. And, frankly, that's not Adam Gaudette either. Adam Gaudette's more of an offensive player. He's a bit of a drain defensively at this point in his career. So that's a big hole. And when you're looking to construct a team, you need your top line center to be a top line center. You need your second line center to arguably be a top line center. And then you need a matchup center. And that's just the way it goes. And then you need a guy like Sutter, I guess, or Jay Beagle or whoever that's going to be, Adam Gaudette, to be able to take minutes on the fourth line and still contribute some offense too. And so for me, it's the depth down the middle needs to figure itself out in the bottom six. And then they need to add themselves a legit scoring winger. And, they did that with Tyler Toffoli for, 10 games. But I'm quite doubtful that they're going to manage to be able to bring him back.
Yeah, fair enough. Last bit of Canucks-related stuff I wanted to chat to you with. Jack Rathbone, of course, really strong sophomore season at Harvard. Understandably, there's some interest on both sides to put pen to paper on an entry-level contract. First of all, have you heard any discussions if those two sides are close? And if Rathbone does sign his contract, what is your 1 and 2 year outlook on his development look like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have any insight into whether they're close to signing a deal. My expectation is that he's coming out though. I think he's thinking about it. He's taking his time. It would be a difficult way to end your college career as just the season ends, just like that, right? They're in the middle of their playoffs. They're looking good. He was tremendous for them. Over a point a game as a second year defenseman is great, great numbers. He's such a high shot generating player, as well as that amazing skating and transitional game that he has. So I'm a big Jack Rathbone fan. I think he is quite clearly their third best prospect in the organization behind Podkolzin and Hoglander. I think that if he does come out, I tweeted this maybe 2 months ago, that if he comes out, I just have this feeling that he's going to come to camp. I hope,
it's knock on the door.
Yeah. Assuming there is rookie camp and real main camp, and he's going to make it a very difficult decision for the organization to send him down to Utica. Inevitably, we've seen with his organization that they will probably put him down there anyways, but I think that's what we're looking to see. He's going to come to camp and he's going to be wheeling all over the ice and that infectious kind of skating transitional up tempo pace that we love from Quinn Hughes. And for some reason, they kind of limit it with Troy Stetcher a little bit, is that I think that's what Rathbone's going to bring to the table. And so then send him down to Utica. And, we expect Brogan Rafferty's probably going to come up and take over Stetcher's spot on the right side on the bottom pairing. So then just feed Rathbone all the minutes in Utica. He gets all the first power play. Give him penalty kill minutes. Give him everything. I want to see him 20 plus minutes a night. Him and Yulevi can skate for miles if they can handle it. And then, he could be knocking it for NHL call-ups as soon as midseason.
Yep, fair enough. Let's shift things over to your 2020 draft rankings. You released them for the month of April, and your full disclosure that despite there not being any hockey being played right now, I think you are planning on releasing at least one more update before the draft, which of course may or may not happen in June at this point.
Yeah, that's right. I very much doubt it will be happening in June, which is unfortunate. I was looking forward to a little trip to Montreal at the end of June this year. But whenever it does happen, I will release another rankings because, my whole thing is I watch film, right? So I'm not at the games as much. So I can go back and I can really dissect these guys. And so it's unfortunate that we don't have the under 18s and even the men's championship where a couple of young kids get to go there. And then obviously CHL playoffs, Memorial Cup, all that good stuff we're missing out on, but that doesn't mean I can't go back and watch a kid's game from October watch another one from January and then check in on them, how they were looking in March again, and really kind of dive deeper into their game. So there will be some more for me.
Right. Fair enough. And let's just go right into the rankings here. And I think you're not in the majority here, but let's put it this way. It's a little interesting that you've got Quentin Byfield ahead of Alex Lafreniere at this point. You've got Byfield at one, Lafreniere at two. I think most scouts have generally amongst the consensus had Lafreniere at number one with Byfield number two. So what is it about Byfield that you just really liked him over Lafreniere, and acknowledging that it's a very small gap between those two players?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went on a big rant on this on a podcast just a couple of days ago too, but it's just more of, I love the uniqueness of Byfield's game today and the potential that it has long term. And so as a 6'5", 215-pound center right now, he's still 17 for like six more months. He is very, very young for this crop. He's 10 months younger than Lafreniere. He has a great skating stride. He has slick hands. Like, I'm talking, you know, tiny Sam Gagne, 5'10" style hands. Like, he's got very nice puck skills. He's got the great shot. At this point, he can be a little inconsistent at the junior level, and that's still saying, you know, he still put up, you know, nearly 2 points a game. So he could get shut down by some teams where they can game plan against him and only him, because in Sudbury, that's it. He is the weapon there. And so what he did for me this past season as a U18 is arguably better than what Lafreniere did last season as a U18, where he won CHL Player of the Year. Because he had more support around him, and I'm not trying to judge who the better player is today, because that's Lafreniere, and we can make a list of who's the best player right now coming into the draft, rank them from 1 to 217 and call it a day. And I see that's a fairly easy exercise as long as you're watching enough games. What we're trying to do is we're trying to see who's going to be the best player in 2030. And for me, the uniqueness of Byfield's game, what he could blossom into as that big horse of a centerman who can just drive play in all situations. And I assume he's going to probably add a little more nastiness to his game. I'm hoping to see that anyways. We haven't seen a player like this since Evgeny Malkin came in. And then before that, it was Joe Thornton. And, you know, Thornton doesn't skate the way Byfield does. So I love Alexis Lafreniere. He's a top flight, totally warranted first overall pick. He's going to drive play on the left wing, one of those rare play driving wingers that everything's going to run through him. But I think that those players are a little more common than a truly unique unicorn of a centerman. And so in years past, I've kind of allowed the group think to push me in a certain direction and influence me. You know, everybody's got Lafreniere number one. I must be wrong here, but you know, I've gotten to the point in this that I'm just going to stick with it. And you know, I'm not saying I'm absolutely right, but I guess we'll check in 10 years and maybe I will be.
I absolutely love that you've mentioned Byfield with Evgeny Malkin. And I remember this being a poll not too long ago where people asked, if it's game seven of a seven game series, who are you taking, Malkin or Sidney Crosby at their prime? And I don't think there were many people that didn't feel that they were hot takey when they said Evgeny Malkin is the guy I want, because Evgeny Malkin at his best was almost unstoppable.
He was insane. Like that 09 playoffs, that whole season, basically, he was just on another level. And then the way he carried that Pittsburgh team in 09 is, we saw it, you know, if you wanted to see him at his very best, that's what it was. And you're right. He was nearly unstoppable. He was Eric Lindros like in his prime, sort of thing.
Yeah. We got to wrap things up very shortly here. Let's say that the Canucks don't make the playoffs this season, that they retain that 2020 pick and defer it to 2021, maybe selecting somewhere in that 12 to 15 range. Is there anyone that sort of jumps off the page for you that could really be a fit for Vancouver in your rankings?
Oh yeah. I mean, obviously I think I really feel strongly that this class is a top 10 class, you know, maybe you call it top 11. And so the board that I have is kind of representative of that. And so if any of those guys slipped to the Canucks at 13 or 14 or wherever they might end up picking, that's the guy you grab. And you don't get fancy and try to draft positionally at that point. You just take the best player available. But if that doesn't come to fruition, I think Rodion Amarov is a player that that Canucks fans should get themselves acquainted with. He is a Russian, and he's by far the best Russian in this draft. He played a good chunk of games in the KHL, the VHL, the MHL, basically did what Pod Colson did last year. He's a very impressive two-way winger. So I think to have a player like that come in that can contribute offense and is already a stalwart defensively, that, you know, could be buddies with Pod Colson. They could be Russian bros. They're playing on a line together, something like that. Could be a lot of fun long term. I think Jake Sanderson is a very interesting player, young for this crop, a left shot defenseman, very, very smooth, has a ton of upside. As the season wore on this year, the scouts just started drooling more and more over the potential of this kid. He's not overly big. He's 6'1", 185, but he's just got all the markers of someone who's going to play big minutes in the NHL and, you know, put up some points too. And then, you know, you're looking at, you could take some swings on some fun kids. You know, Noel Gundler has an incredible release. He played his entire season in the SHL this year. I got him 14 on my board. There's a little, you know, whispers behind the scenes that he never gets picked for the Swedish national teams because of attitude concerns. But wherever he goes, he puts up a ton of points. And then I'll just mention one more. One of my personal favorites in the draft, Emil Andre, is basically he's like Quinn Hughes light on the left side as well. 5'9", but 185 pounds. So, you know, he bounces guys sometimes that come running. He's creative. He's shifty. He's intelligent. He can dance that blue line similar to how Hughes can. And, you know, to slide another guy like that onto your blue line, I think that could be a lot of fun.
Right. Some good names to watch there if the Canucks are picking on day one at the NHL draft, whenever that is. One more thing that we want to chat, Cam, and maybe this is a bit of a first for us, but we've never really discussed very young prospects. The WHL granting exceptional status to North Vancouver's Connor Bedard. Now, I've seen highlights of this kid playing against guys who are 2 or 3 years older than him, and this guy's got a lot of skill, and he doesn't really seem to shy away from the contact either. I mean, I'm sure you've seen a little bit of Connor Bedard as well, acknowledging that he's probably going to be in the WHL next year. If you're Connor Bedard, how hard is it to approach the label of getting exceptional status and trying to meet the expectations that come with it? What do you make out of Connor Bedard?
Oh, he's, you know, I don't consider myself, I'm not out there watching these 14 year olds getting ready for the CHL drafts. But he's been on my radar for a while because he can't help but see the highlights that he puts out. And it's historic. The WHL has never let a kid in exceptional status. You know, Matt Savoy kind of worked some funny angles and ended up playing a nice chunk of games this year in the dub, but he also was one day shy of being eligible to play a full season there. So that was a weird cutoff. But when we're talking about Bedard, he's 14. He won't turn 15 until July, and he's going to play a full season next year in the dub, and he's going to probably step in and put up a ton of points. So he was playing as a 14 year old this year at West Van Academy and led that entire league in scoring. And I believe that's a U19 league. At the very least, it's a U18 league. And so he's playing against, you know, 17 year olds, maybe 18 year olds as well. And he dominated, led in goals, led in points. He skates. His speed is incredible. There's a highlight out there where he's doing backwards crossovers through the neutral zone, just picking up a ton of speed and then blows by the defender, shifty, short side cheese sort of thing. And so he's a very, very exciting player that's gonna push really hard for that number one spot in 2023. Which has a couple of really fun kids in it. So there's a Russian that, you know, people are already comparing to Ovechkin and Matvid Michkov. And then there's Brandon Jaeger and Adam Fantilli, who Adam Fantilli just in the OHL draft was supposed to go number one overall and ended up signing a letter of intent with the USHL and Chicago Steel, which were the best team in the USHL this year. And so we're not sure if that was kind of a didn't want to get drafted to a shitty OHL team, so I'll sign with the USHL and drop my stock there, which it did. And you ended up going 18th overall, I think, in the OHL draft. Or maybe he is going to go play in the USHL and then go play in the NCAA. So there's four kids in that 2023 crop that all have kind of a claim for the title, and it'll be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, for sure. We'll leave it at that, Cam. Thank you so much for chatting. We appreciate the time as always. A reminder for folks to follow your work on Twitter at @hockey_Robinson, as well as all those deep dives on prospects. I really enjoy those, both on Dobber Hockey and on Elite Prospects. Cam, thanks so much for joining us. Hopefully get you back in, assuming there's a draft in June.
Yeah, sounds good, Matt. Thanks for having me.
All right, back to wrap up the show after this.
Here we are wrapping up another action-packed episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. We talked about all sorts of things. You probably thought this was going to be another one of Chris and Anna specials where we talk nonsense nonstop, but Matt was here and he required that hockey conversation be brought back to the podcast. Keep in mind, though, you'll probably bring up the same topics next week and the week after that and the week after that and after that and after that and after that.
Until hockey returns, baby.
Yeah. You know, there are other things that we can talk about, and we're generating content, you know, by pulling, you know, all sorts of things together. I don't know.
Right.
It's just magic at this
point. So Sorry, I'm just going to sort of hijack the thread. And a special thanks to Cam Robinson for joining us here on the show. I realized, Chris, that we were sort of amiss. We were supposed to lead off with a shout out to Mark from Aberdeen. Do you have
Did you want to?
Do you want me to do it, or do you want to do that?
Nah, you do it. You do it.
I'm half Aberdonian. Why shouldn't I do it?
Okay, fine. Anna, you do it.
Hey, you do it, Anna.
Okay. Mark is my people. We wanted to. This is like such a weird time, and I think it really brings out the best in people. And Mark is clearly one of those awesome people because he is volunteering by driving around elderly people with mental health issues because his work in daycare centers has come to an end because of the coronavirus. So using up his time to drive around these elderly patients, which is just such a stand-up thing to do.
It is. And that, you know, if there was a way to show, you know, some signs of massive respect to Mark and others who are, you know, taking on activities that continue to allow, you know, the world to function and people to have access to the world that they need. I mean, I wish I could do that in audio form. Like if there was a drop right now of like massive applause, I would be inserting it into the podcast right this moment.
And Mark from Aberdeen mentioning that while he's been driving elderly people, you know, to and from, he's been binge watching on Netflix in the evenings, and he's been listening to the latest C4 podcast when he's not at the hospital. So, you know, who are we? We're just three people that sit around a microphone and talk about the NHL, even when the NHL is not around. But to be honest with you, like, especially during these crazy times, I felt really compelled to just be on the show today for people like Mark, who are clearly doing their part to, as you said, Chris, keep the world turning. And, you know, we talk about who we call our hockey heroes, and Mark from Aberdeen, like, this guy's a legitimate hero in our minds. And if what we do helps bring him any sort of normalcy in his life while he's taking on these noble tasks, I mean, shout outs to you, Mark from Aberdeen. And, man, like, it's almost emotional just thinking about it, because my heart goes out to all of our frontline workers right now who are doing their part to, you know, get us through these difficult times. And so, man, I mean, if we could do a podcast every single day just to help these people, that'd be great. But, you know, it's really great to see that kind of feedback, and it was emotionally overwhelming just seeing that. So we are committed to try and keep this podcast going for as long as we can, so we can help entertain frontline workers just like you, Mark.
Yes, well done, well said. So as we look to wrap this episode up, Anna, any other words of wisdom and joy that you wish to share with all of our listeners?
No, just to echo what Matt said, we're going to keep going just to provide our tiny bit of help. And yeah, we'd like to continue to highlight all the people doing the real hero work, because that ain't us. We're just talking some nonsense, but we'll keep doing it if it helps.
Anything else, Matt?
Let me ask you guys this. I was doing Mrs. Producer's laundry today, and I've noticed that there were a lot of pajamas that I've been washing. Are you guys like working from home in your pajamas as well, or are you wearing normal human clothes?
I have been getting dressed, normal human clothes. Granted, it's like all shorts, because why?
Or are you just working in your night pajamas and then transitioning into your day pajamas?
Oh no, not at all. That's not me. That's what the wife's doing, but she's not working right now.
I'm trying to, you know, keep some sense of normality, and I am going into the office twice a week, so I do get dressed for that. But yeah, it's tempting.
The act of getting dressed for me is what sort of provides some level of normalcy, and as weird as that might sound, it just helps me reduce a little bit of the anxiety that I'm having to deal with. I mean, I've shared on past episodes that anxiety is a struggle of mine, and in the world as it is today, I mean, you'd find it funny, but getting dressed helps me manage that.
Helps you cope. Yeah, I feel you. I'm picking up what you're throwing down.
Yeah, and so That's why I go through that.
I agree. I do lay out my clothes the night before, and it does become part of the routine of normality. I agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, quickly before we wrap up, Next is passing along a one more message here. Do you think Jim Benning signs Tyler Myers to that deal if we knew what Quinn Hughes was going to be in his first season?
You know, I'm going to say he does. And I'm not saying that he does for the same reasons. I think he does for the size in the room. Like, Jim Benning likes the size and good in the room guys.
Fair enough.
And that's, you know, let's call a spade a spade. Myers got what Myers got because that's what the market allowed for. So it doesn't matter what you want out of the player. It's what the player is going to get paid, and the Canucks paid market value for him.
Fair enough. I have no more thoughts, but it was great to catch up with you guys again. I know I've been away from the last couple episodes, just catching up on life. It's a busy time for me professionally, and hoping that we can keep it going here for the next few weeks. Although I'm really hoping I can see you guys soon, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, we could do a video stream. A Zoom call.
I don't want to see you guys that close. I don't want to see your day pajamas again, Chris.
Maybe you need to send Adam a text message, get him out for an episode.
I know Nexus is still listening, but I have kept in contact with Adam. Adam actually had a bit of a medical emergency a few weeks ago. Wow. He's on some heart medication now, but he's sort of been away for the last few weeks. He's doing fine, and it's not really my place to sort of speak to so I'll let him talk to you about it a little bit as well, but he's sort of been recovering from that. And he's had clear instructions not to get his heart rate up so high. So I said to him, then it's probably not a good idea that you ever see me.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I was not aware of this. This is the type of information that would probably be good to share so we don't poke fun at the guy.
It's okay. He's literally been playing Zelda Breath of the Wild for the last couple of weeks. Great isolation game, by the way.
I was going to say, and that's not... You know, heart rate raising. I prefer to play Animal Crossing, although I get so pissed off at Tom.
Okay, so I think the next episode we're going to talk about Animal Crossing, and there are many things I want to say about Animal Crossing, but we'll save that for another episode.
Oh, and next week we should also talk about Tiger King, because I started that specifically.
Let's talk about Tiger King after this.
I have to watch it. I will watch an episode or two. I saw someone share this on meme on Twitter, but that's essentially Calvin and Hobbes all grown up. Anyhow.
If Calvin and Hobbes did a lot of messed up stuff, maybe.
go to Florida, anything happens. Final words for me. Nexus dropped in a patron chat, but the hockey god himself has decided to pick up the controller and start streaming himself playing video games. So we should all, you know, send a C4 hello to him on Twitch. I also want to point out that there are a lot of other, Canucks podcasters out there that have started streaming gameplay. Most of them are playing Call of Duty, Warzone, but,
We can get Godet to play Sea Fortnite with us.
I would hope we could, but you know, when was the last time you played Sea Fortnite?
You know what? The game has changed so much, I don't even recognize it.
Yeah. But again, thanks for tuning in each and every week. We'll be back again with another crazy episode next week. And if Matt has his way, it'll be hockey talk. If Annie and I have our way, we'll be talking about all sorts of nonsense because we think that's more fun. But if you are looking to find us and you are curious, well, how the heck do I support this podcast? Hit that subscribe button on whatever podcast app you happen to be tuning in on. You can learn more about the podcast itself by going to c4podcast.com. We are currently on the Overtime Media Network, though we have some news to share about that in the near future, which you'll have to tune in to hear all about. And on Twitter, we're at the C4 Podcast. We're facebook.com/C4Podcast and pretty much C4 Podcast every which way to Tuesday. So on behalf of Matt Lee at MattLee_61, Anna Forsyth at A4Sy03, myself, Chris at Lightforce, and Adam O'Neill Carter at AdamFOC, sign off this podcast with those magical two words. We're out.